Blog Talk Radio. Hi everybody, welcome to the Neil Christian Baker Psychic Hour. Today we are continuing our talk on achieving self-mastery and taking calls for on-air readings. 914-338-0164 is the call-in number. And callers, we ask that you press 1 if you'd like to speak with us. All right, so we have a caller. Let's bring this caller on. Area code 917. Hello? Area code 917, we're listening to your conversation. Okay. Well, we're going to get have a chance to talk then early today.
Yeah, we were talking about self-mastery.
Yes, that's correct.
Well, it really, I mean, any topic you deal with in the psychic realm doesn't really have an end to it. So when we devote time to a topic, even if we repeat the and continue the topic on forthcoming shows, there's never an end. I mean, self-mastery, first of all, in my estimation, comes into the attitude of mind, body, and soul. You need to have mastery over your body and over your mind. And then ultimately, mastery over your soul, meaning your spiritual composition. And if you don't have, if you really don't have mastery over all three, then this sometimes results like in people being very talented or very gifted or very athletic, and then their lives everywhere else is a mess. Or let's take the example of someone who has mastery over their mind and their body, but they have a fear of death and they don't really have a true idea of what the afterlife is, and they don't know what's going to happen, and there's doubts that occur as one approaches their declining years. So that's not mastery over spiritual matter. Mastery over spiritual matter is that you actually incorporate into your life the heartbeat, if you will, of spiritual awareness, so that you're constantly working through your lifetime with the idea that there's a spiritual intensity that is coupled with all the aspects of what you have to do
right.
in the world.
Relationship, your foundation, creativity,
yeah.
your balance, vision, communication, and go ahead.
Well, just real quickly, because I mean, to the finest attitude of life, as such an individual, they're not depressed. They don't get depressed. They don't get remorse. They move through the world not being ignorant or unaware or avoiding certain important parts of existence that are difficult to deal with. But they do so in a way to where they're not set off balance, or at least not permanently or deeply set off balance. I mean, we all get affected and we cry and we have moments where we go through difficult periods. But to have self-mastery is not to be cold and detached. It's actually to be involved and balanced so that you can do both. It's like a doctor that doesn't cry every time he does a surgery and cuts somebody open and he starts crying because he's hurting them. You know, right. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure there might be doctors out there like that. Who
Maybe
knows?
Maybe Red Skelton would do that, but it's the understanding the body, the mind, and the soul. It's grasping how they all work together under the firm authority of an awareness of the universe and existence, all captured within one's lifetime. It's all there, right there. And so there is a sense of eternity, even in the position of mortality, because the spirit continues the journey. So what were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, in all the successive lifetimes, there may be mastery in a certain area or another area. And obviously, this soul keeps coming back into different bodies in order to really eventually achieve that spiritual mastery so the soul can transcend the planet entirely. But the problem is when the soul comes back into the body, obviously they're opening up the whole book of karma again. So they may have done great in relationships, say, in a previous lifetime, but then whatever challenges they're attributes they're given in the lifetime that they're in can disrupt whatever was accomplished in the past. So not only is that goal of spiritual mastery supposed to be achieved, but the body, the mind, and what was accomplished in a past life might be completely destroyed in.
Yeah, you can often, sure. I mean, anyone can destroy what they've done. I mean, yes, life is a process, and there's a responsibility that we keep the ball rolling in that process of life, that we don't dismantle or disrupt or destroy things we have done in the past. I mean, how many lives can we examine where people have led beautiful lives, and then finally in their 50s or 60s, they fall into corruption, or they do something that they would have never done before. So there is this matter of that life is to be lived with responsibility up to the very last moment of the physical breath. And then you look at people that have extreme talent, and let's say someone racked with pain. Let's take somebody, you know, like Prince or Robin Williams or people who just have severe pain. I know even in the world of acting, Brian Keith shot himself. He was an actor. He was on Family Affair, but he was also a major movie star actor because he didn't want to go through the pain of the cancer or whatever, some kind of disease he had. When do we get to the idea that those of us who we admire and uphold and their examples and they're talented and gifted, and then we find out, oh my God, they overdosed. They were abusing drugs. They committed suicide. This is not self-mastery. Not to the fullest extent of the word. I mean, you could say, well, they took mastery over their life and they ended their life, or maybe self-mastery is conducting a life with drugs.
And the example that you gave, Prince, actually is interesting, because there are many people that said he lives totally clean. There is no way he would take drugs. I mean, and so it was like a real surprise when there was clearly an addiction problem there. And there's probably some other contributing factors to his death, which may have been on the dark side,
yeah,
you know, so
you
there,
know,
that's a different story, but he was definitely involved in, you know, treating his pain. He had terrible pain.
You know, I like to call it
dancing,
you know,
injuries and things like that.
In the aspect of nature, we have the undertow. That was in the world according to Garp, John Irving's book, the undertow, the undercurrent.
Didn't that become a Robin Williams movie?
Yeah, it became.
So it's
movie.
Funny you mentioned Robin Williams,
yeah,
and then
yeah.
mentioned that book.
The book and the movie, totally
right,
different.
But
obviously.
But
what you see on the surface, let's look at quicksand. What you see on the surface this is what brought a lot of dinosaurs or tar pits to their deaths. It's not always revealing what you see on the surface. It's not always revealing what's underneath. So when we look at the human soul, when we look at the human persona, the veneer of life, the surface qualities of life, it's just like a tooth where you have different layers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5 being crucial when you're looking at a cavity or something like that. The deeper you go into the human soul of an individual, usually the deeper the darkness. The more engulfing is the sense of isolation or despair in many cases. Unless you find those rare individuals that the deeper you go, the more faith you find. People who have extreme faith in life up to the end of life. Those rare individuals, I mean, you can almost count them in contrast to people who have more or less despair in their life and struggling with life. But I think every individual is responsible for looking deep into their soul and asking themselves, where is there darkness in my life? What secrets do I hold? What do I regret? Where are my weaknesses? Where are my doubts? The more you eliminate that with the assurance that you have led a fulfilling life without repercussions of sin or mishaps that you're just not proud of, that's the key to being balanced.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, it brings up another point, which is not just darkness in someone's life, but a propensity to kind of skim the surface of life. Because I was recently in a conversation in a professional situation with someone, very nice person, very well accomplished in this person's profession. And we were having a conversation, you know, woman to woman, actually. So it was nice having girl talk. But through the course of the conversation, it became evident to me that there was a lack of depth in this individual, a severe lack of depth, which I think through being in a spiritual process myself, it makes it easier to recognize in other people when there's not a real deep core of spirituality within a person. Not that that's the only thing that is a requirement of depth. I mean, obviously, you know, intellect, so on and so forth. But this is a person who would be considered of high intellectual standard based on their station in life. And it was surprising to me, some of the statements that were coming out of this person's mouth, that I was like, wow, where is the depth?
Yeah, when you get into the journey of the philosopher's mind, Sartre, Camus, and people like this, some of the existentialists, and not just existentialists, but some of the deepest philosophers have great remorse and a kind of a dark attitude about existence itself. And whether you manage it through self-mastery, like a Nietzsche kind of character, or Camus, you're responsible for your own actions, or whether you depend on a God or Jesus or Buddha, or you release everything to a higher power, and you feel that by doing that, you have cleansed your soul because you have accepted a unique, superior figure that is without blemish. It doesn't, they all fall into still the category of self-mastery, because self-mastery is finding that place in life where you have found this perfect balance and you are content and you are at one with the universe. You're not destroying the universe. You're not destroying other people's lives. You are virtually at one with yourself, your higher self, and then ultimately the highest power of all, however you define it, God, Jesus, the universe of oneness, the creator. Your metaphors are all out there dancing around. Some of them take it literally, that it's not a metaphor, it's a living energy. But nonetheless, we conduct ourselves as people, if we're going to have self-mastery, we conduct ourselves as people under a creed of laws and regulations and standards, which also includes the standard of the philosophy of your life. where you, what you've done on the planet, what you've done to help this planet. Are you ready to release yourself of it? And are there any, is there anything you've left undone, or is there anything you've left that has really caused damage to the world that you inhabited while you were in it? So I think, too, that demands a certain self-mastery, just as much as one looks at one's wife and say, did I procrastinate? Was I depressed? Did I sleep on the couch too long? Or did I create to the utmost? Did I live life to the fullest? And I think those are some of the questions, none of which really have a complete turnaround, because someone who has a zest for life and climbs mountains and traverses deserts and all kinds of things, creates everything they can with the utmost gusto and accomplishment,
but
there can still be something lacking there.
Right. And even someone who's involved in, you know, giving back to the community, being of service, may not reach that ultimate peak.
I think, you know, one of the problems that distracts from self-mastery is the search for meaning. Viktor Frankl did Man's Search for Meaning, and he also was highly involved in the concentration camps. And one of the notes that he designated as a source of survival and recovery was humor. That's again something Camus does in terms of defying the gods, myth of Sisyphus, by saying that if you repeat the same energy over and over again, you can have an act of defiance within yourself. So we have an act of defiance against oppression. That could be considered part of self-mastery. Fighting battles, you know, all of these things are part of the ordeal of life. They sometimes keep us busy and preoccupied. People who fight for fight for human rights, they're all noteworthy occupations. But it doesn't really answer the source of self-mastery. So sometimes we, in our pursuit of happiness, our pursuit of rights, our pursuit of pleasure, we neglect the idea that we sometimes confuse that as the main cause and the main reason that we exist, even though they may be noble and quite mandatory in the effort to accomplish your goal.
Right. I think on the last show we were talking about the fact that we're using the word achievement, which is actually, you know, not really the correct word if we're talking about reaching a certain peak or level of self-mastery. The whole act of achievement itself, I mean, if someone is in a mode of achieving throughout life, then there's something that's been neglected entirely, because that's not the right energy either.
Well, yeah, you know, when you look at Life Achievement Award, I think Carol Burnett got a Life Achievement Award. People who are icons in their industry, you know, people who are pioneers and icons and have established a vast array of creative achievement, and they seem to be very humanistic and caring. I mean, that's a big piece of the pie. But sometimes we confuse our achievement, which is noteworthy and mandatory and important, we confuse that with the whole concept of existence. Because if you can ask a person who maybe had a Life Achievement Award, what's your concept of God? Well, I don't know. Where are you going? I mean, do you fear death? Well, you know, I've lived a full life. When death comes, I'll accept it. I mean, this isn't really, accepting death is not really a gift. Whether we accept death or we fight death, that's not the gift. Death is inevitable. So how we respond to accepting it, fighting it, is not really the true concept of understanding death. It's how you involve death in the process of eternity, how you express death and the movement of life beginning and ending on a physical breath, how you incorporate that into the philosophy of your overall appearance into the universe. if someone says, like, somebody like Carl Sagan, well, when I die, I'm going to the stars. I'll be cast across a sea of stars. Therein, right there, is a concept of the vastness of the universe. So whether the metaphor is a sea of stars or heaven, or you're going to be with the angels, or you're going to be in the great conference room of philosophers, that gives one the ability to conduct one's life in such a way that there is an acceptance of the process of breath. When we think of breath, I mean, we think of breath as beginning and continuing and continuing and continuing and then ending. And we try to fill that the length of that breath with as much life and activity as we possibly can. But then the answer is, what is the eternal breath?
Our 917 caller came back in, but dropped again. Okay. That was the one who we were listening to. So hopefully.
Well, and then there's the idea of being bored by a commentator.
I don't think so. That person isn't listening. She just wants to have a question answered, which is what we're here for.
It's interesting. You know, the Zen masters and the yogi masters, and you think of all these people, you think this is a fascinating part of being a human being. When you look at someone who perfects their craft, and you think this is wonderful. I mean, this is what it is to be a human being, perfecting your craft in such a way that it gives a further dimension to the idea of the human condition. So I'm always in awe of someone who perfects their craft, whatever it may be, even if it's the perfection of breath and stillness and meditation. I mean, you can go and listen to a great philosopher speak, or you could see a Zen Buddhist just being silent and sitting in such a position that the whole universe is captured in the eternal essences of their mind. I mean, sometimes it's language, sometimes it's silence. Sometimes it's discovery and invention. Sometimes it's sheer nobility and courage. People who that guy, the soldier that rescued all those guys, they made a movie out about to get his name, but he was the medic that refused. He was a pacifist, and he was a medic.
Oh, you watched that movie.
Yeah, and I forget his name. It's a shame on me, but he continued to rescue American soldiers.
Not only American soldiers, but also the other side. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I think there's a lot to be said for what we say, the triumph of the human spirit, rising above the odds and doing that. Even somebody like, whether you believe in his politics or not, even somebody like Carter, who's building homes for people.
And
picking up a hammer.
And I think it's a $140,000 home he lives in. He's lived in for the last however long he's been out of the presidency.
Yeah.
He's lived there. Since the 70s.
Very modest. If we take the time to stop and quit being so desperately neurotic or desperately frantic about what we're going to get, what's going to happen, what do you see for this year for me? Those are still immediately concerning questions. My concern is, like you were talking about, Kristen, is the depth of one's consciousness beyond the immediacy, the immediate problems and confusions and obstacles of life. What underlies that in terms of the concept of being a human being?
Well, yeah, and how, I mean, where does what needs to be achieved to fulfill all the chakras intersect with the achieving self-mastery idea? So, I mean, comes to mind is, you know, being a woman, for instance, that really, really wants to conceive, right? And then is the whole lifetime that the woman is in her period of fertile years is spent trying to conceive, but she's unable to conceive. And there's all this energy towards having a baby. And then so what happens to this woman? I mean, perhaps there's been other lifetimes where that she's been a parent, whether a male or female, but, you know, putting all that energy into a certain goal is going to probably prevent other aspects of the soul from developing and will force a return to the planet. I mean, if you spend your life wanting to achieve a goal, whatever it may be, you know, it's going to be difficult to,
right.
to,
that's very true. I mean,
attain
the way I do.
Attain,
I view the chakras as thoroughly entertaining because you're looking at different parts, departments of your being, and you're controlling and analyzing and working with all of these different departments, whether it's the first chakra, your home, your foundation, your sexuality, your relationships, your communication, your creativity, your spirituality. These are chakras within your body that more or less are on a vertical line alignment, starting with the root chakra all the way up to the crown, at least in the immediate body. And the idea to me is that you look at each chakra as living energies composed of narration, composed of a substance that you can clearly define in its separate category. And you decide, have I fulfilled each one? And as I put them all together and interrelate them into one total concept, do they all work? Or does one bring another one down? Is your relationship bringing your ability down to perform at work?
But, I mean, you have to also consider, I think, what everybody needs to consider, what level of fulfillment they're going to have of each individual chakra. I mean, obviously, people are going to have more to fulfill in a specific chakra than another. You know?
Someone living alone is not going to be someone who has five
second,
kids
right.
and a wife.
Exactly.
And a
so it's the second chakra is going to be something totally different to that person.
Yeah, it's all... I mean, we're given our life. Our life is given to us. We have our situation that we have to deal with. And some of us have compiled more problems than others. Some of us have clean records. Some of us have terrible traffic records. Some of us have bad credit scores. Some of us are in debt. Some of us are above the higher brackets of income. But we all have our journeys to take. And in the concept of that journey and in the everyday business of how we wake up and deal with our particular challenges, we have to consider the wholeness of that. Someone who wakes up and is a great attorney and he's fighting for the rights of people and he slips about between 2 and 3 and has an affair with his secretary. I mean, that's not balance.
As long as he's not married, it's okay.
Oh, yeah. I'm talking about someone within the confinements of that tradition.
Well, and it could be, you know, I mean, even if I was making a joke, but obviously if he's having an affair with the secretary, it might not be the most professional thing to do either,
So. That's right. You know, or, you know, we present these dramatic situations, but let's look at this for the sense of the entertainment of language here. Let's look at the teacher who teaches children. They're fantastic teachers. And then between 12 and 1, they go into the bathroom and look at pornography. You know, what is the idea of the wholeness of a person, of the wholeness of their life, and how that energy
permeates into all the areas of their being.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it clearly, I think it takes a certain amount of boldness and honesty to not excuse one's vices, to say, well, you know, I'm a good person, so what does it matter if I'm doing this? And maybe to some extent it doesn't matter because it doesn't really do that much harm. You know, in the old days, the farmer who would go around to the barn and drink the whiskey and his wife, you know, didn't know. I mean, that guy's not going to hell. He's not going to be condemned for what he did. But we're there's kind of a pleasure in being sneaky, a little bit naughty. There's nothing wrong with
really?
Those things. In some respects.
Did you tell?
In some respects. I mean, even the greatest of human beings have their moments of notoriety and controversy. We can't help it. We can't help it being in the world, being basically human. that we're not saying you have to reach perfection, but still self-mastery does involve the idea that there's a totality, there's a total conversation regarding oneself and the universe, which amounts to something that is somewhat transcendent.
It says 201 want a reading. Press 1-201 if you'd like to speak with us, or if you're just listening, then just stay as you are. 201. Okay. Go on.
So
continue. Yes, it's Gunjan, but I didn't want to. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
Good. I was only going to listen, but...
Then you changed your mind?
Yeah. How are you guys? And calling in to see if you pick up anything.
We're doing fine.
Mm-hmm.
You're still waiting for the MRI results?
Yeah, that's going to be in February.
February, you said that, but I thought, you know, maybe there'd be, she's 9/20/81. Last time we were talking about our kids and their creativity. Well, we were saying artistic daughter, and I said something about writing son, but you said, no, he's into mechanical, but that's not art. Does he have any artistic interest before we get into the reading? Because I wanted to clarify that.
No.
Nothing artistic.
He's more scientific.
So there's no artistic, but the daughter
figure
is
out
artistic.
How the cube works. You know, you're working at home more or less, Gunjan.
And yeah, I'm working from home.
So there must be something behind that, to where the universe says, okay, Gunjan, you're not going to be working out. You're going to be working at home. Maybe you're not commanding the kind of salary you want, but the trade-off is that you will be at home. And I think, are you finding yourself preoccupying yourself efficiently, or do you get bored?
That's exactly what I was going to ask.
Right now, it's been a month, but starting Monday, I'm supposed to have more responsibilities, so I'm sure it's going to keep me busy.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I have worked at this position before, so I know.
I guess the reason I ask about boredom is that I think that, knowing Gunjan over the years, she likes the social aspect of her work environment. So with working at home, you don't have that, obviously.
Isolation, you get it.
You're more isolated. You don't have the, you know, you're not working with other people. You don't have the friendships and all that.
Is your social life, you know, colorful?
No. I'm just home all day, every day. But I'm kind of happy. You know, it's nice change.
Okay. Well, as long as you're navigating through your new job and you're at home, as long as you're feeling it's a nice change, you're okay. I mean, you're okay there, and you don't have any immediacy. I mean, you have this concerning health result in February, which Kristen and I are very aware of, and we're putting out energy for you every day, and that's the truth. And I mean, we're not going to predict anything on the air, Gunjan. It's not appropriate. But we're not suggesting that there's
issue.
Anything wrong. We're feeling that things are going to be calm and you're going to be okay. You know, there's nothing, in other words, there's no dark corners that we're seeing that we're not sharing with you. In fact, I don't know. I expect everything to be fine. My expectations are, at least this, my hope. And that, you know, that the energy level of at least our, Chris and I's participation in being aware of your situation and concerns is aided by the fact that we work a little bit with energy every day for you. So I think that's the best we can do under the circumstances. And, but is there anything specific you want to say if you search right now in life for this brief moment, Gunjan, and you think, well, okay, I'm on the show. What kind of question can I ask them? Is there anything beyond what we've already discussed that you want to present real quickly to us?
Well, let's say, I always like to look at the worst. So,
we love it too. It's so fun. I always like to look at the worst.
Oh.
So, no, because I like to prepare myself.
Okay.
So let's say that I have cancer, and it's not getting well, and I only have maybe years to live or whatever. What can I do to not come back?
Well, you have to do everything that you feel you need. First of all, you need to do whatever you feel you need to do or accomplish. You get going on it. So that would be one thing. Also, leaving a legacy behind, leaving something behind. So if you were going to maybe leave something for your children, some tape, something that you filmed, maybe a book, a diary of thoughts, maybe something for them to do in your absence, challenges for them to learn, you know, dreams you have about them. You know, you want to leave, if you're going to ask that kind of a course question, then I would say make sure what you leave behind continues. Even if you
because you know how you always talk about karma, we come back because of our karma. So I don't want to keep coming back. I want a transcendent, if that makes sense. I think that's the word that you use. So I don't want to keep coming back. I want to be done with my karma.
But it's challenging because to at least try to reduce karma, you have to be in the seventh chakra somewhat. So, well, not somewhat, you have to be in the seventh chakra in your life. So you have to start to ask yourself, how am I living in the seventh chakra on a daily basis? What am I doing? You know, I mean, you know, I would love to, there's a lot of things I would love to do in terms of my personal pleasure, my creativity, but you know, what we do, Neil and I, in our lives to try to ensure that we're going to get off the planet, hopefully, after this lifetime, is we're in service all the time to people. And we offer we're in conference with people on a spiritual level. That's, you know, day in and day out. So in Gungeon's own way, how do you stay in the seventh chakra in your own life? I mean, I think, you know, we're getting into what legacy, you're saying what legacy she needs to leave, but that's, again, an achievement thing. I mean, yes, it's important. There's a legacy that people need to leave on the planet, but also what...
Oh, I totally agree with you. Yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, that Kristen brings up an excellent point, Gungeon, about your concept of spirituality and how you converse with that in your life.
How is it expressed? And then, you know, looking at our code. I mean, what
you also have to, you know, release yourself from the things that you're not too proud of. Either asking for forgiveness inside or outside of yourself towards others. But you don't really want to leave the planet with too much guilt.
Okay.
Somehow you've got to find a release of that before the physical breath is done. But, you know, to answer Kristen's concept here about spirituality, what would you say in terms of not just what you believe, but how you activate that throughout your life?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, no, you're supposed to answer now. So we're asking you. I mean, like, how can you respond to that? Are activating spirituality on your level in your life?
Well, I think I'm a spiritual person, but I don't know what you mean by seventh chakra.
Well, that's spirituality.
That's spirituality.
In essence. and you can stumble through it, but you know,
and
if you're a spiritual person, how do you define that in words? Let's start there.
I'm more intuitive. I look at people. I look in people. I try to search their soul instead of looking outwards and looking at materialistic things. I mean, you know, you could look at me and you could say that I'm very materialistic, but deep down I am not. I look for more than what a person is, and I try to connect with people on a spiritual level.
Okay, probing into the depths of someone, that's a start. You know, mystics do it, psychologists and therapists do it, even doctors do it to some extent. People who really want to understand the what makes a person tick, analyzing somebody, all that are steps towards the energy of, you know, looking into thyself, contemplate thy eyes.
It's more, yeah, I was going to say that's, I mean, more involved in the third eye, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I would say a project for Gunjan would start researching. If she doesn't want to come back, the first step is start to read more about spirituality and, faith, service, all of those aspects of being a spiritual person, and then start to integrate into her own life.
Yeah.
You know, well, how am I of service to others?
Am
I honesty? Am I humble? Go ahead.
I already signed up for being a donor. So if something were to happen to me, you know, they could do whatever they want to do with my body. To be useful to someone else. But what else would you consider of service? Because, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what else would you consider of service besides
volunteering,
that?
Maybe volunteering. I mean, that's not necessarily going to transcend you, nor will organ donation get you off the planet. I mean, anybody can, you know, check a box on their driver's license to donate the organs, and it's great. I mean, there's, you know, no insult to that, but it has to be a more active level. So I would say, I don't know. I mean, it's
well,
just
no,
tough.
You're on the right.
Yeah,
you know,
she's on the right track.
Volunteering, tutoring, expressing the richness of what you have to bring to the world, your culture, your heritage, gifts.
Honestly, not to be pathetic or anything, but honestly, I don't think I contributed anything to the world. And I don't think I matter if I live or die. And I'm not being pathetic. I'm not trying to gain sympathy or anything, but I'm just being honest that I'm not going to leave a legacy, that's for sure. And I don't think I have anything to offer, you know,
I think she does have something to offer. And this has been, I mean, you've been talking about this for the past few months or several months because of the, you know, you were having frustration in the job search and you're saying, you know, I feel like I don't have a purpose here and I'm stuck at home and I'm a housewife and I'm still doing this. So that's been, and now you've got a job, but you're still saying the same thing, which is, To me, it shows that there needs to be a deeper purpose that you find, because there is a purpose for you in the world. Something I see in Gunjan's birth date is that she has a missing sevens on both sides of her birth date, between the 8 and the 1 and the 9 and the 2. So, I mean, to me, she finding the essence of spirituality is part of your purpose here on the planet. And I would say with some of those, I mean, just start reading more, educating yourself about spirituality, and I think that there will be a natural, then your actions will follow naturally once you start educating yourself about the real, you know, what comprises being a spiritual being on the planet. Go ahead, Neil.
You know, I can't help it. Sounds corny, but I can't help the way when you were talking, thinking about the story, the fairy tale, the little drummer boy, and that even if you have nothing but a rat-a-tat-tat on a drum to give to your creator, that's something. Because if you say that your life doesn't matter for much, then what you're really essentially saying, and bear with me, what you're really essentially saying is the act of creation, the act of living and existence, is not that big a deal. And it is a big deal. So whatever you have, whether it's big or whether it's small, it's all part of the molecular structure and the cellular structure of our universe. Everything starts off as being small, Gungeon. So don't estimate that you don't have anything grand to give. The smallest thing can be, you know, the parable between the man giving $1 million to the church and a woman giving, or the synagogue, and the woman giving a penny. And the question is,
who gets into heaven?
The man gave $1 million, right. But he had 10 million and the woman only had a penny. She gets what she gave. So I can't really back up your philosophy that you have nothing to give, because it destroys at least this person's concept of the relativity of what one has to offer to the world. And I don't know if you've even explored it.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, you're giving gifts to your children, but you help and you're advertising at work. You're of substance to your husband. I mean, it's just not self, you know, it's just not you doing things for others. But we know you well enough. You take beauty in your body, in your looks, in your appearance.
And her presentation of food, which is a gift to others. You know,
your makeup is outstanding. I don't know how you do that, but you know. All of that it's like saying to a flower, well, you don't have much to give, but maybe the flower, all it has to give is its beauty.
Yeah. Yeah. So just out of curiosity, if a person gives $1 million to the church and the lady gives them a penny, who gets into heaven?
Well, it's an example, so I don't know if it's on the basis of, you know, well, you know, if you give, the point is, if you give everything you have, exactly,
it's a
sacrifice.
You see, it was an analogy saying that if you, it doesn't matter that you're giving,
it's not about
something
the money.
Because you feel you made a contribution. Have you given your body, mind, heart, and soul to the position of the betterment of the world? It's what you give as a human being. It's not the amount, it's the importance, you see.
And it's the energy behind what is given. I mean, you know, someone giving $1 million to the church who has $10 million or $100 million, that's the energy behind it. You know, yes, there's a donation being given, but someone who's giving everything they have obviously has whole thrust of their energy behind it.
Correct. Let's say, Gungeon, someone says, you know, I got all these clothes. I don't need them anymore. I'm going to give them to Goodwill. Okay, they give them Goodwill. Let's say another person just bought $200 shoes, and they love them, and they're walking down the street, and they see a beggar without shoes. They take off their shoes, and they give it to them. You see, there's a different attitude in the concept of giving, and that's what we're talking about.
Yeah. I guess that's what I am so confused about. I went to India last year, and I went to pilgrimage facilities where they teach meditation and humanity and helping others and everything, dedicating your life to helping others. And I went there, and I asked them the same thing. I'm like, what should I be doing? I mean, I can't just quit my job and, you know, be a monk, you know?
But
it's
you
not
can.
Go ahead.
Yeah, But you can actively, I mean, Neil and I aren't monks either, but we're actively contributing to the betterment, at least, I mean, the betterment of the world in some small way. You know, that's what I'm saying, trying to contribute. I'm not, you know.
But we've got other callers, Gunjan, so thank you for your call. We're here for you.
All
but,
right.
And okay. Do what I said, do some research and report back to us what you learned.
Okay.
That's your
okay.
assignment.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank
you're welcome.
You.
Bye. You're welcome. Okay, 718 is next. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. You sound out of breath. Who's this?
My name is Aaliyah.
Oh, Aaliyah. Yeah, Aaliyah, we spoke with you actually a week ago or something. What's your question?
You know, you say like, you had this dramatic change. I don't see no change, nothing.
Well, you
like,
don't,
I've been
you
trying
don't...
to look for work.
Well, right now, do we think we're going to have a dramatic change within a week? I don't think so.
Yeah, we talked to her the 4th.
Huh?
We talked to her on the 4th.
Yeah, we talked to her on the 4th.
5
so,
days ago.
Yeah, so, I mean, I wouldn't...
I wish we were the genies of life, you know. I mean, if, you know, you remind me of the person who says, well, I'll believe in God if you come down right now, come down and pull that tree out of the earth. You know, it's kind of funny. You're humorous. Yeah, you haven't seen anything and you're making me laugh. Sometimes it doesn't happen immediately. I've been asking what you've been asking, and I've been asking for 50 years, and I've, you know,
so
I haven't done all my answers.
I think
but.
What it may be what Aaliyah is referring to, because I had to like calculate quickly what we told her, and now I'm remembering. She's 20. You're 22, right?
Uh huh.
Yeah.
You're 22 right now, or going to be, what is it?
Born 96.
Yeah, 2018. So 22, you're going to be 23. So you're going through a change. You're going through a change. And I think we talked about what that change is comprised of, which you were saying, I think I said job, something with a move. And you validated that by saying, yeah, I've been in the Job Corps. I'm trying to make a decision between security guard and being in culinary school.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's
but
your change.
That wasn't my question.
What?
That wasn't my question.
Well, you're saying that nothing's happened, but I just want to go back to the change we talked about. You're in the process of that already. So it's not like, well, nothing's happened in 5 days. You're in the process of a change as we speak. You've been going through it for the past, you know, year. But go ahead with your question.
Hold on a second. I was talking to someone. And for like a week, and then we just like got mad distant. I don't know why.
So you're talking to someone like a guy?
Yes.
A romantic interest, and what is his birth date? And you were talking, and then things just kind of fell off.
Yeah.
And stopped. And you're wondering why? Do you have his birth date?
May 10th.
Oh, born in the same day. And what year, do you know?
I think 1990. I know he's 21 right now.
He's 21 right now. So he's born in 1997, right? He's going to be 22. You're going to be 23. So it'd be 1997, 16 and 16. He's a 32 equals 5, and you guys are a 5-2 together, 7. I don't know. We've got 3 minutes, 2 minutes
really?
Left in the
That's
show.
All we got.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. You know, I don't. I'm not. We don't have time to answer that. You're looking for a job at AMC right now. I would try to get
AMC.
That job as an usher at AMC.
Oh yeah.
And as far as this individual is concerned, if you were talking to him and it suddenly dropped off. That might be too complicated for us to answer right now unless you reach out to him and say, hey, where you been? What's going on? You know, and see if you get a response after talking to us. We'll put out energy that give it another try and see if he responds to you reaching out again, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Is it only conversation? Is that as far as it's gone with him?
Oh, yeah. That's it.
Okay, well, you're not losing anything yet. You're just having a conversation. And a lot of people just, they search around, they look around, they experiment with other people, you don't have an agreement in a relationship yet that he's mandated or required to talk to you all the time. There's been no boundaries established yet. So you're wondering, because you got interested in him, but there's nothing set in gold right now that he has to respond to you. You don't even have a relationship. You just have kind of a talking, get to know each other. But reach out to him again. Say, hey, where are you? What's going on? I'd like to talk to you. See what he does.
Okay,
Aaliyah, you can call us. If you call us earlier, we can spend a little more time with you on it, on our next show. We're back on the air on Friday.
Okay.
Hey, take care.
You too.
Bye. We had an onslaught of callers, but then obviously we don't have time. One and two, they dropped because
we had
3 minutes. Yeah, we had a couple
others. Did they come on late?
Late.
Late.
Anyway, yeah, if we aren't here at the top of the hour, hang on. But, we had a little bit of a late start today, so we apologize for that. Wait, today's Friday, not Wednesday.
Yeah,
so we're back
Friday.
On the, did I tell her we're back on the air Friday?
Yeah, I don't know.
We're back on the air on Wednesday, in fact, at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern. And we hope you have a great weekend, everyone. Bye-bye.